You were always on my mind. You were always on my
mind. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 11 a.m. Next up is the Dirtbag.
Open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through our public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Solve, bringing communities together across Oregon and Southwest Washington to clean and restore neighborhoods and natural areas year-round. More information on leading or joining a cleanup with tools and support this Earth Month is available at solve.org.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from One Green World, supporting food sovereignty and offering fruiting plants from around the world, also providing seasonal tastings and classes at their retail location. Plant catalogs and more information available at onegreenworld.com.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 11:02 a.m. Next up is the Dirtbag.
Okay, we've made it.
Yes.
Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. Welcome to The Dirtbag, a garden variety show where we feature mostly edible plants and today, grandchildren.
Yes. Fun
with,
day.
With me is Jim Gilbert and his partner, Lorraine, is also here. So we've got a full house here, but it'll be just us two after short introductions here. We've got a full show, and hopefully along the lines we will have Dan Estaccio. I think that's how his name is pronounced. He's the owner of Terra Gardens, and he's the one who did the soil test on our listener Lee's garden and came back with results that are different than the ones that we are used to. Ours, what I'm used to is a listing of nutrients and whatnot that are there and what you can do to add more. But this came back with a number, an EC number. Does that number make any sense? Oh, yeah. Lorraine knows what we're talking about here. EC equals 68 MS. Yeah, she thinks that's a little iffy. And I think that's what Dan will talk about. But this is all dependent on him being able to herd the cats so he can free up a few minutes to call in and talk to us about that. So we hope that that can happen. All right. Well, Jim, you want to take it over here? And
sure. Yeah, so this is actually the spring break in Washington, and the three young gardeners, farmers that are here with us today go to school in Washington, so they're down here on the farm in Oregon for their spring break. And it's great to have them here. We just took the train down yesterday from Bellingham, so we'll be doing a lot of fun stuff, including going to a baseball game tomorrow night, something sort of radical that we found this apparently a new stadium out in Hillsboro.
Oh, yeah, the Hillsboro Hops.
Hillsboro Hops, yes.
We're
going to go watch a real official baseball game. Should be fun. So anyway, I thought it would be nice to have each of them say a quick hello in the form of telling us what is their favorite fruit. And we can start with the youngest, Hazel, who's six. And Hazel, hopefully that microphone works, and
yeah,
you can tell us what is your favorite fruit.
What's your favorite fruit?
Remember the name?
She likes them all.
Lorraine, okay. Well, then we'll go to Mike, who's eight, and Mike, tell us your favorite fruit, please.
My favorite fruit is fig joa.
Wonderful. What's another? Do you remember the other name for feijoa?
Pineapple guava.
Great.
Uh-huh.
Excellent fruit. And Owen.
Good choice, too, on the favorite fruit there.
Owen, who's 10, almost in middle school. Owen, what's your favorite fruit?
Yangme.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about yangme. Where is it from?
It's a Japanese fruit in Japan.
Yeah. That's great. It's pretty new fruit. It's something a lot of people don't know about.
I don't know about that. Does it have a common name? You know, like orange or apple rather than a certain type of it?
I don't know.
Oh, Jim, do you know?
No.
What is this called then? What's the?
Yangme.
Yangme.
Yeah.
When did you taste it?
About like a year ago or something.
Was that in Japan?
No. It was here. At my grandpa's farm.
Oh, do you grow those?
Yep, we're introducing it.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a new fruit. It's very interesting. I mean, it's not totally new, but it's not well known in America at this point.
All right.
So, yeah, it's a good
one. Well, all right, that's your favorite already then. Good deal.
And Hazel, is Hazel, can she tell us? Or Hazel, are you there? You tell us your favorite fruit?
Still thinking about it, I guess.
Well, I know what it is.
Oh.
Fresh fig.
Fresh figs. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one too. All you guys have good choices.
Yeah. Well, so we'll see you guys after the show, and have fun at the coffee shop.
Thanks for showing up and bringing Jim in. He didn't have to.
Yes, that's right. And I should mention,
play train tag.
I know Lorraine didn't get to say anything, but her work at the nursery right now is exceptional. It's the work that she hopefully will write up about, because she's doing a lot of breeding work with different fruits, with two goals in mind, really. One is to create columns with apples and pears, is to improve columnar fruits, which are really nice for small gardens, and also varieties that will do well in our Pacific Northwest climate. So just to say something.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Lorraine.
Well, yeah, we should just get her on, have her as a guest one time.
I hope so.
Okay, well, I do have one event that wrote in and asked if we could mention this. And then I'll let Jim talk about our encore. It's not an encore performance. It's a bonus episode.
Yes, that's right. Earth Day.
This from the Multnomah County Master Gardener Association. They will have organic veggie starts at a plant sale on May 9th. Saturday, May 9th, 10 to 2 at 1624 Northeast Hancock Street. Let's see. I think they have more information on their website, which, well, you're just going to have to look it up. It's a big one. MultnomahMasterGardeners.org. You can find lots of information there too. So organic veggie starts.
Great.
They might have other things. It seemed to me I saw a more involved flyer, but I didn't print it out.
But sounds like fun.
Right in the heart of inner Northeast there, so
easy
to get to, and they're organic.
Can't beat that.
Nope. Well, I guess unless they were giving them away, but they're not going to do that.
No, they just support the Master Gardeners. So
indeed.
Good job. Good work.
We are going to have an extra dirtbag episode, and this will be it's on Earth Day, is it not? The 22nd?
April 22nd, yep.
I don't remember what day that is now.
Wednesday.
Oh, it's just another Wednesday.
Another Wednesday,
But not at 11. It will be at 12.
Yes.
12 to 1.
But we'll be here a little early. I know I will be for sure. It's an opportunity to come and probably witness the planting of a new street tree.
Two trees, I think.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. I thought it was one. But anyway, something. One or two.
Right.
And in the parking strip, the old one had to be taken out when we had some sewage problems here.
The old tree,
So they're planting a new tree. And I think we'll definitely be able, you can come and meet us. It would be really fun to have a chance to say hi to some listeners. I don't know exactly where we're going to be in the studio, whether we'll be in the studio itself or out on the street, but wherever we are, we'd love to say hi to folks, and we'll sort of wing it, you know, talk about plants and stuff and share what we can with you all.
Ty is going to be with us too, so it'll be just like another dirt bag.
Yeah. I think the event, they're actually starting the event at like 11 and going till 2 or something. But our plan is to be here on the air from noon to 1. But as I said, I'll definitely be here before then, and hopefully Glenn will join me.
I'll certainly be here by noon.
Okay, great.
It's busy. This is the bee season, you know, are expanding, and there's a lot of things to do.
I can't imagine. I mean, there's so many blooms right now. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's swarm season, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right.
Okay, so we've got a brief rundown here of what we're going to talk about here. Our plant of the month is cherry tomato, specifically cherry tomatoes. And realize that if you have any gardening questions, any question, we would tackle it. 503-231-8187. Hopefully, Dan can call in and we'll talk about what these soil test numbers mean. We'll also talk about planting potted plants. It's not just take it out of the pot, throw it into the ground, and because that
doesn't work.
It doesn't work very well for very long. All right. We'll have our garden stumper half past the hour, and the first person with the correct answer that calls our number, 503-231-8187, will be entitled to a free garden hand tool sharpening. Pruners, loppers, shears, things that will benefit greatly from sharpening.
Yes.
And go ahead.
It's pretty nice to have a sharp tool.
Indeed.
Just make sure you know where the tool is and where your fingers are.
Yeah.
I've had a couple of small interactions like that, not pleasant ones. So.
Yeah. Issues.
Yeah.
Right. Talk just a little bit more about seed starting if we can. Just because this is the time to get just about everything going. Not necessarily outside yet for everything, but we've had some warm weather. We've had some very nice weather, but this weekend, you know, our highs are 54 and something like that. So,
well, it's
probably
funny.
Not tomatoes time
this
yet.
This morning there was ice on the roof of our car, even though the outside temperature was showing us 35, but it was,
It can do that.
It can do that.
Yeah. Don't think it got that cold in Portland, but Jim will also talk about some new varieties of feijoa, persimmon, and fig. And our dirtbag dictionary term is IPM. We don't need to say much about this other than to identify what it is. And apparently the classroom edition of An Oregon Story is ready to roll.
Yay!
All right. Why don't we, just because we have a natural break here, let's get into our first musical selection here. My the theme for this month is Kings We Do Want. So our first king is Earl King. And this song, Come On, Let the Good Times Roll. Actually, it's just Come On, Parts 1 and 2. A lot of major artists have covered Come On, including Jimi Hendrix and Stevie Ray Vaughan. Those are two that come to mind. I think Stevie Guitar Miller also covered that. But anyway, this is the guy who wrote it, or at least co-wrote it, Earl King. Right, so Come On, Parts 1 and 2.
My heart and why I love you so. I love you, baby, like a mine of gold. So come on, baby, let the good time roll. Understood. It's even nicer when you're feeling good. You got me flipping like a flag on a pole. So come on, baby, and let the good time roll.
Yep, Earl King. We could have more kings like Earl.
Yes, absolutely. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. Okay, our plant of the month, cherry tomato. And I always recommend cherry tomatoes, growing cherry tomatoes, because you're always going to be successful. Mm-hmm. And I would also argue that even though it would take a little bit more work to prepare the same amount of cherry tomatoes that it would be for one beefsteak tomato, your overall production is probably going to be more with the cherry tomato. They'll start producing early, and they'll continue to produce later than the big beefsteak ones. And it doesn't really matter what the weather is. You're going to get cherry tomatoes. I'll tell you some of my favorites. You know, there's probably thousands of varieties of tomatoes, fewer cherry tomatoes, but the ones that I've grow, I would say that my favorite one in a different way is Pink Princess. And it's pink. They're not exactly round. They're a little more oblong. Nothing like a yellow pear cherry tomato, which, by the way, I don't recommend at all. They're almost tasteless. They do hold up in the weather better, though, the yellow cherry tomatoes, but the pear tomatoes. But the Pink Princess is maybe not as sweet as Sun Gold, which is my second recommended variety, but it has a different flavor, a different bouquet. So that's Pink Princess. Sun Gold is kind of the standard now for cherry tomatoes in that it is incredibly sweet, much sweeter than the Sweet Million. Well, actually, I started out with the Sweet 100 cherry tomato. That's been around for generations. And then the Sweet Million came in, you know, inflation. Mm-hmm. No, it was another variety, just, you know, and it's wonderful, and it's red. So those are three varieties, the Pink Princess, the Sun Gold, and the Sweet Million. But another one that I like the name of it, and I still grow it, it's called honey drop. And it just has a different characteristic than the others, too. So that's some ideas on what you're doing. And you'll find certainly the Sun Gold in most nursery stores if you don't start them yourselves. Pink Princess, I don't know about that. I've always started them from seed.
So. Still time to do that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, not – oh, for starting from seed?
Yeah.
Well, with cherry tomato, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not going to bloom as early. But if you get them out when the soil is already warm, then and if you get the if you plant them out too early, then they just sit there and don't do anything. And if you plant them out 2 weeks later, then the ones that you planted 2 weeks later can catch up almost with the other ones. So,
and we have a forecast for a very warm summer. I understand.
Well, yeah, that's so you never know.
Yeah,
and we have some more 70s coming up tomorrow and tomorrow and Friday, and then on the weekend, you know, mid 50s.
Yeah.
And lows in the 40s. I mean, that's it's April.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We get a summer day and we forget that it's April.
Well, it's been pretty nice weather. I mean, in terms of like for the plant, you know, the peaches and apricots in a different location, but you know, generally this kind of weather,
yeah,
you know, was really nice for prunus, blooms.
That reminds me, I'm listening to a biography of Mark Twain, and it's it's 45 hours worth of listening. You know, I can't get it done, and I'm on my second 3 week from the library. Now and then I have to wait 3 or 4 months between because it's rather popular. But speaking of peaches, he did have the quip, and maybe you've heard this, that he was talking about. There's this type of peach that is so juicy that a man bit into it and the juice squirted across the street and drowned a dog. it's just Mark Twain.
What's the name of the book?
I don't know.
Oh,
it's a long one though.
Oh,
I don't remember.
I listen to books now because my eyesight, I can't read them. So you'll have to tell me about it later.
I can certainly get you the title of that. But anyway, so that's that. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Cherry tomatoes. Still no call from Dan. So we'll wait. And on that, then let's talk about planting potted plants.
Sure. Yeah, it's we sadly at our nursery. I mean, sadly I say we used to grow a lot of bare root fruit trees, but we have really shifted now pretty much to everything in a container, and a lot of nice plants are available in pots. And the nice thing about potted plants in a nursery situation, and sometimes for a consumer too, is you can basically get by them year round, where a bare root plant is only available in the spring during a certain time. So. Given that, if you have a potted plant that you want to do well, there are a couple of main considerations. The first one is dig a hole big enough, probably twice the diameter at least of the pot, and because you want some room for the roots that you're going to loosen up to fit in that hole. And that second part, loosening the roots, is really important. What I do, especially if it's a plant that's got a pretty tight root system, and what that will happen on some, just because if they're around long enough, they fill the pot with roots, take the pot off, lay the plant on its side, and then just massage it. Roll it around, push your hand, put your weight into it if it's tough, just keep moving it around, and you'll notice that the roots will start to loosen up as you do that. Then work your fingers into that root mass and start pulling it apart.
Kind of just to visualize, kind of trying to straighten them out
Well, they're not going to be something. They're not going to be typically thick, so they're just going to be like hair roots, as you know. And then so as you pull them out, they'll become like a big head of hair. And if there's some that are exceptionally long, you can prune them back, but generally it depends on the plant. You can if they're not, you can just leave them alone. And what I do is I at the bottom of the planting hole, which needs to be at least as deep as the depth of the plant, I make
the, the depth of the root zone.
Yeah,
the roots.
Of the root
roots
system.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I make a little mound at the bottom of soil, and then I drape the, when I put the plant in the hole with the loose roots, I sort of spread them out around that little mountain that I've made.
And the little mountain that you've made, that's just the same dirt that you've
absolutely
took out of the hole.
Yeah, I just
we're not adding anything.
Nope. I take the stuff from the, usually there's enough loose dirt in the bottom of the hole.
Yeah.
I just use some of that to mound it up, make a mound. And the other important part is the top of the plant, where the potting soil, at the top of the potting soil should be the same level as the surrounding soil where you're planting it.
Not higher.
And typically not lower.
No.
The same height.
Because you'd be exposing more roots then.
Yeah, in some cases it's dangerous to put too much soil on because then you can actually hurt the plant.
Mm-hmm.
By building it up too high. So now you have your plant in the hole, you've got the roots spread out, you've got it at the right height in the hole, which also that little mound at the bottom can help. If you put it in, you notice it's gone down too low, just build that little mountain a little higher. And then when you refill the soil in the hole, use the same soil you took out of the hole. I don't advise, you can add a little powdery nutrition if you want, but generally speaking, I just put the same stuff that was in the mm-hmm. hole back in the hole.
You don't want to fill it with potting soil or
no,
anything of that nature.
No,
just whatever.
Because we
used to say that, we dig a $15 hole for a $5 plant.
Yeah.
You know, if we'll keep, we'll assume inflation hasn't happened. But now it's, you dig a $5 hole for a $5 plant.
That's
just the same
right.
That comes out, goes
that's
back
right.
in.
That's right. It's called tough love. Those roots are going to have to grow in that normal, that native soil
right.
That's all surrounding there. You don't want to make them think, oh, boy, this is wonderful right here where we are. We'll just stay here.
I did want to clarify or just ask the question here. When you talked about you could cut a root if it was too long, you don't want to leave that and just coil it around the hole that you have existing. You just
typically not,
right?
Yeah, you nice to have the roots going out away from the plant, not curled around. So, and pruning off long ones is perfectly fine. They'll generate new roots from that cut point. And then after you fill the hole and you can work it in to the hole. So it's not, you just dump it in, but kind of get it in there. So it's around the roots and everything. And then you just give it a good watering, to settle all the soil around the roots, and the plant's going to be pretty happy.
What do you say about, stepping on the soil there around the roots? I mean, around the stem.
Yeah. I personally do it. I do it. I don't step on it. I do it with my hands.
Uh-huh.
Put my just body weight on top, just
okay.
to push it down.
While you're on your knees.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's just my style of doing it. I mean, if the soil was moist, stepping on it might make it a little too compact. I think it's better to keep it a little friable.
Right.
And water it in well, and then if the plant is dormant, we're kind of leaving the dormant period right now. There may be some after watering. You don't need to do much for a while because there's no demand from leaves to dry the plant out. But if it's actively growing, giving it a good watering once you plant it, definitely you probably. A week, 5 to 7 days later, another good watering, just to make sure that the roots have got plenty of moisture. It takes about 2 weeks for roots to become established and getting moisture from the surrounding soil.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what about any kind of mulch?
Yeah.
And when?
Well, mulching to keep weeds down is pretty, I think it's really important. So I would do that right away. If you want to give it some nutrition, you can put some of that down, like rotted manure. I just was recommending this to somebody recently. There's a company not far from us called Stutzman that makes a rotted chicken manure, composted chicken manure, I guess is a better word for it. And it's a nice nutrition benefit for a plant. Spread some of that on the surface around the soil, and then put some bark dust or straw or something on top to keep the weeds down and hold the moisture in.
Just to keep and keep it away from the stem.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't let it touch that.
Yeah.
I've had late Lucy Hardiman, a friend who is well known in the gardening circles. She said when before she ever planted a potted plant, she would soak it in a 5-gallon bucket for an hour or something like that and watch the bubbles come up. And just and this would be more, I think, if it's if you know that it's root bound and just has a hard time accepting water.
Yeah, it's not a. I mean, it's a good idea to definitely have a moist, the root system moist. If it's very, it's dry. If you pick the, you know, one of the ways I tell whether a plant needs water or not is just pick it up. You know, if it's if you pick up the plant and it feels like you could just throw it up in the air because it's so light.
Yeah,
you know, you definitely want to give it that idea of soaking. It's a great idea.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good point. Yeah.
All right, well.
And what I would love is listeners, anybody who is planting something like this or has any experience and success with it, be, you know, let us know. We'd like to hear how things are going for you with it.
Okay. Well, you know what time it is, Jim?
Let's see.
It's half past the hour.
Oh, my gosh.
That's right. It's time for the dirt bag. I mean, the garden stumper.
Okay.
All right.
With the musical accompaniment.
Okay, Jim.
One of the fun things about agriculture and horticulture, and I didn't study it in school, sadly. I wish I had. I was talking with the grandkids this morning on the way into town about Latin or scientific names. It's fascinating, really, and I just am so impressed with the people who created that and came up with these and figured out that plants are how plants are related to each other. So there are. I'm not an expert at this, but I think I know this part. I know we have species, and then we have genus, and then we have family. So, a species name has the genus name first, and then another name describing that particular species.
So, could you, since most people are familiar with Homo sapiens, then can you relate that to this?
Well, sure. If there was another species of Homo, it would have a different name after it. I suppose Neanderthal had probably a different.
But I believe so. Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but that's the. Right. But the closely related plants, for example, are the same genus. In this case, the garden stumper. I'm talking about the genus Prunus, and the member.
So how does that in Homo sapiens? Where is Prunus? That's the family.
Well, with Homo sapien, we're talking about animals. You know, an animal, not a plant. But
Homo is the
would be the genus.
The genus, yeah. And the species is sapien.
Sapien, exactly right. And there's a obviously a family of us, and I don't know what that is. But
hominoids
primates
or whatever. But so now when we're talking about Prunus, so Prunus is like Homo.
Yep.
Here.
Yep.
And so what we're asking for, so that this is just kind of a way to picture what we're talking about here.
Yep. And there are many species in the Prunus genus, many of which we really like. You know, apricots, peaches, cherries, plums, all members of the Prunus genus.
Okay.
And they all have different names, species names, because they're different, like Prunus arminiaca is apricot.
That's the sapien of the Homo sapiens.
Prunus avium is sweet cherry. Prunus persica is peach.
And then there can be varieties of these same ones,
further on. That's the next step, right?
And they're not generally Latinized, those names.
No, no. No, that's true. The Latin, and the interesting thing about the Latin or scientific name, Linnaeus was, Lorraine took a class in this, uh-huh. So she was telling me this morning.
That's what we need to do, isn't it?
That would be wonderful. Linnaeus, I think, was the person who came up with the idea of using Latin for these names, because it's a, pardon the expression, a dead language. It's a language that's no longer spoken, but so it doesn't change.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh,
it's uh-huh. It's the root of many other languages, but the Latin itself doesn't change. So around the world, the same. You know, you could have different common names. For example, in Oregon, we talk about filberts, or we talk about hazelnuts. They're the same thing. You know, mm-hmm. You got to be really careful with common names. But Corylus avellana is the scientific name for hazelnut or filbert, and if you said that to somebody from Germany or Russia or New Zealand or wherever,
yeah.
They all would recognize, if they knew the scientific name, they would know that was
right.
what that nut is.
Okay, so the garden stumper. There is one here.
Yes.
Hang with us, listeners.
All right, so we all know about Prunus. We know Prunus is a large genus of plants, and represents all these really tasty fruits. There is a very popular nut that is a member of the Prunus genus, and that is the stumper. What is the nut? And you get extra credit if you know the Latin name or the scientific name.
Ted at Cully Farm Store will sharpen the other side of your pruners.
That's right.
Okay. Well, if you know the answer to that, or you want to take a stab at it, 503-231-8187. Well done, Jim.
Thanks.
I think that's the longest garden stumper we've ever had, however.
Well, it was so fun because I talked to the kids about it on the way up here.
Yeah.
And Owen, who's 10, he's getting interested
he's
in these things
it, yeah.
now, you know. So
yeah.
It's fun to share it with him.
All right. Maybe you have some inheritance.
Well, we have schemes. They'll fit any of our desires, but we'll see.
Okay. Well, I'll just mention here while we wait for those phone calls to pour in, right, is, get your seeds started. You can start now for the cucurbits, the squash, and the cucumbers, and tomatoes and peppers. You could still start them. It wouldn't be ideal, but it's what I did in the last week, believe it or not. It's been busy. And, many of the cold season crops can be planted outside for peas still, but all the brassicas, the broccoli, cabbage, all those lettuces, greens, get them out there. And if we get a little rain, although it's not a lot of rain in the forecast, that'll even be better. But if not, keep an eye on the soil and get them wet.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're broadcasting carrot seeds, for example. Oftentimes what's recommended is to sprinkle anything on it, a light mulch, just to keep the seeds a little bit moister longer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's really hot and the sun's beating down on them, you might need to moisten it two times a day.
Sure.
Right. Okay, Jim, somebody has called 503-231-8187, I believe. Well, if he's not on the phone, then he did get the correct answer. Did that go over the air, Ty, your comment? Oh. Okay. Well, he was right.
But who is he?
He hung up.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he didn't want to hold or whatever.
Yeah, that's too bad. Well, I would say if anybody knows the Latin name,
oh yeah,
we could ask for that, and then somebody could get the tool sharpening.
Yeah. Well, if Tim wants to call back and claim his sharpening, then that'd be fine. But yes, almond.
Okay. Do we want to continue with the Latin name part?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, somebody knows the Latin name for almonds.
Yeah.
It's going to be Prunus something, is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah, see, that's how we know.
Yep. And the person who called and gave us the correct answer.
Here's another one. I don't know if you know this or not, but I think it's true. What flower is also part of Prunus? I don't know on this, but I'd have to check this out. Should I just? We shouldn't use that unless somebody wants to. If they know, if there is one.
I don't know.
Okay, during our next musical break, maybe I'll take time to do that. In fact, it's time for our next musical break here.
Okay.
But if you do know the Latin name, the scientific name. So we could mention one more thing about that. The many times the names are Latinized. So if they're going to name a flower for Darwin, they might
Darwinii or something.
Yes, yeah, right, sure. right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay, our second musical selection, another king that we could use more of, and this is Carole King, and this is from a CD, an album that I have. I'm not sure when it was reduced, but it was Carole King's demos that she sent in to record companies or whatnot, so this was written in the early to mid 60s and might have been on Brill Street in New York. That was just where a lot of songwriters just came to work every day, like Neil Diamond started out there, and many of them did, including Carole King and her then husband Goffin. And his first name now escapes me. But anyway, she wrote You've Got a Friend, which what's his name? James Taylor made a big hit out of. But this was also released on Carole King's album Tapestry, and they recorded them at about the same time, and they even used many, if not all, of the same musicians. But James Taylor got the number one hit out of it. But anyway, this is a very nice... just piano and Carole King doing her own song, You've Got a Friend. Whoops. No, we'll get Carole King up there.
When you're down and troubled, nothing is going right. Close your eyes and think of me, and soon I will be there to brighten up even your darkest night. You just call.
Well, that goes on for the rest of the song.
Nice song.
Yeah, it is. She was a incredible songwriter, and I've had our musical guest musical theme before, and I didn't tell you what the theme was until we were done, but it was, and I played a song by the Beatles and the Stones, and now I can't remember the other one else, but what did they have in common? Well, they were all written by Carole King, and those big groups covered her. But,
before we move on, I should just mention also about, I might have talked about this a couple of months ago, about what were almonds, growing them here in Oregon. And we have some varieties we introduced years ago from the Nikita Botanic Garden in Ukraine that bloom late, which is an important characteristic. Mm-hmm. And varieties like Primavera and Seaside, I think One Green World I know has them. I'm sure some others around do as well. But we've got great crops, and when I listen to my books, I crack almonds, and then we make tamari almonds with a recipe, which I'd be happy to share. Maybe we can put on the website, which is, they're so good. I mean, far better than what we can buy, at least what I've seen in commercial tamari almonds. So real treat.
How do you crack your nuts?
I have a nutcracker. I have a bowl for the shells and nut for the kernels.
I just want to mention that I saw at one of my brother's houses, he would go to a farm that all of my brothers, well, three of my four brothers used to work at, where we'd move pipes and harvest things. But one of the things that this farm grew were filberts. They were filberts at the time. This was in the 70s.
Of course.
But he still goes back there to the farm and gleans, you know, picks up almonds that, you know, with permission from the family, we're
picks
still
up
friends.
Almonds or filberts?
Excuse me, filberts, yeah. Right. But this nutcracker that he had, it was just a board with another board on top that had the hole about the size of a filbert. Maybe the hole was a little larger so it would fit in. But it would stick up.
Hmm.
So you could just, you know, fill up these line of holes and then with a hammer, you know, bang, 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 bang. Because you wouldn't hit the nut because the wood was up far enough with the holes. So I'm wondering if something like that might...
You know, the almonds are different sizes, at least the ones have. And it's it wouldn't work. Exactly.
You'd have to put them flat. Anyway, I mean, it's maybe putting them on the side.
What I do is I crack them, and then I usually have to do a little finger manipulation to get the kernel out. One of the things I got kind of excited about this recently, so I may have more information in another year, but we think that the California crops, that they do a lot more irrigation than we do, than we were doing with ours, because we had varying sizes. We had some quite small ones. All of them are fine. And I mean, they're all good tasting. And I just had I just make this bowl of kernels, which we would then do the tamari treatment to. But, we have some friends in the Dalles where we're doing our apricot evaluation project. And they have an almond there, one of the types that, one of these late blooming kinds, that has typically much larger nuts. So we want to try to figure out why that is and see what we can do here in the valley.
All right.
Why not?
Well, when you have a report,
Absolutely. Report in.
Right. Okay. I'll just mention our dirtbag dictionary term, and then we'll talk about the new varieties that you have going there or available there, working on. And IPM, Integrated Pest Management. Essentially, you know, you may hear this, you've probably been hearing, fortunately, this more and more these days. And essentially, it's just a pyramid in that before we get to chemical solutions, we're going to try cultural traditions. Just, you know, maybe giving the pruning your plants so there's more air circulation. So we don't have to worry so much about fungal diseases. You know, they just dry out and more sunshine can get through there. So that's an easy thing to do first. We can also rely on biological methods, whether we're adding biologics to the soil or if you're just planting beneficial insect-attracting plants to get those lace wings into your garden area and where they want to and they need to dine on pest plants in order to survive. Mm-hmm. Then we would get to organic products. So if you're spraying apple trees for disease, you'd use copper, which is considered an organic product. And then finally, you would, if you have to, resort to the chemical or non-organic. It's just so integrated pest management. Try these other things first.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be happier.
Yes.
and it's just easier to do these things too. And I also, usually I cover this out right about at the top of the show about what I'm trying to understand this month. And this is something that I've been trying to understand most of my life, and I finally looked it up, and it still didn't make any sense to me, is why somebody would say, "All right, already." Have you heard that phrase?
Yeah, sure.
How did it even come to mean anything or come into be? So what it said, it's used in a way that shows annoyance when expressing agreement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But why those words? All right, already. I mean, it's like, all right, stop. I already know what you're talking about. Is that what it's from?
Yeah.
I'm still trying to understand it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, I mean, probably because it also has A-L and each word starts. You know,
well,
some connection there.
It catches on that.
Already.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not complaining about it. I'm just trying to understand it. Some things I really am complaining about.
Well,
this one.
I have a quick one for you.
Uh-oh.
Fine.
Oh, yeah. That's that's taken on new connotation, hasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's not really fine, but fine. Fine.
It's kind of like that then, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right already.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's... we'll talk about new varieties. We'll have our last musical selection, and then we'll talk about the classroom edition.
Awesome. Great. So one of the fun things about working with plants, and I've been doing this for quite a while, and I had a previous career, boat building, fishing commercially, and when I got into this work, this plant work, it was clear to me that this is what I could do for the rest of my life, and I will do it for the rest
of
my
life.
Yeah. And one of the fun parts is discovering new varieties. So over the years, we've imported a number of varieties of persimmon, which is actually a pretty easy thing to – I'm not sure what it is today, but when we did it several years ago, it was pretty easy to import these varieties. And we got a number of them from Korea. And we've now discovered that some of them are really quite special. So we've introduced them, and one variety that I think for anybody who is certainly in the Willamette Valley or Washington, west of the Cascade Mountains, where its temperatures don't get below zero, it's called Cardinal, and it ripens.
What variety?
Cardinal.
For what fruit?
It's persimmon.
Persimmon, okay.
And we call this crunchy sweet, because this is the kind, like a fuyu-type persimmon that you can eat like an apple. It doesn't have to be soft. And it ripens 3 to 4 weeks ahead of the earliest ones we've had until now.
Hmm.
And a nice-sized fruit, attractive tree,
beautiful
foliage.
Is it more red?
No, it's a typical orange. You know,
so cardinal's a little misnomer there.
Okay.
Unless we're defining...
British.
Using another definition of cardinal.
Yeah. These new varieties were bird names, and my partner Lorraine was the one who pioneered the names. So we'd have to ask her, and may be more reddish than, you know, I don't trust my eyesight anymore to these things. But it's basically, or it's a good orange anyway. So cardinal, you know, if you live in the country where you're not in the city, where you don't have any or you know, not in one of the warmer spots of the valley, that would be a really excellent variety to try. We found it really excellent at our place. So and another one of that, of the other type, which we call soft sweet, which have to get soft to eat, is Raven, which is a really interesting one because it's black, has black skin.
Oh, so there is some connection there.
Yes. Thank you, Glenn. and also ripens early. And it's a very tasty fruit. And, it's fun. I mean, there's several others with bird names. There's Robin, Phoenix, I mentioned Raven, Oriole. And they're all early ripening. Those three are early ripening, soft, sweet types.
So you have to bring in some samples of these.
I will.
Maybe even in August or something, huh?
Well, cardinal would be September.
September, okay.
Yeah, it'll be probably the earliest one, but I'll definitely do that. So then another is a kind of a chance fig that we had been growing for a number of years, really hadn't been paying a lot of attention to. We have a lot of figs we're experimenting with. And this one, we realized that, so Desert King has been sort of the standard for the Willamette Valley anywhere. You can grow a lot of other varieties here too, but for it's called a San Pedro type because it bears its main crop on the old wood that grew the previous year. It's really a good one. It's probably the main disadvantage of Desert King is its vigor. It's probably the most vigorous fig that we grow. by far. And, you know, you got to prune it some, or it gets up 12 feet tall, and it's hard to pick.
More.
Yeah,
or more.
Or more. And it's kind of hard to pick the fruit when it's that up, unless you're exceedingly tall. So we found one, and it's the name we first had on it was Compacta, but a friend of ours has it in Europe, and he calls it Ficolino. And it ripened about 3 weeks before Desert King.
Jeez.
So, like early July, which was amazing, and it's a large, very nice size, very tasty fruit. So we're pretty excited about that.
So, what did you call that one?
Ficolino.
Ficolino.
Ficolino. Fico, I think, is Italian for fig.
Oh.
And anyway, that's the name.
All right.
Ficolino, and then we also mentioned, and if we have a moment, I guess we have still a moment. We have a Feijoa pineapple guava variety that we will be introducing soon. We have several new varieties that we brought back from New Zealand from the main two breeders there. And one of those breeders gave us some seed a couple of years ago from work he had done. His goal in breeding had changed from early ripening to good storage varieties for commercial use, because in New Zealand it exports a lot. So he gave us some seed from his earlier variety trials, earlier work, and we planted it out. And it was pretty old, but we got pretty decent germination. And one of them turned out to be, again, very, very early. Earliest one we have by far. And so we called it Early Heart, because Roy Hart is the name of the breeder.
Uh-huh.
So that's another to watch for that one someday. We'll be introducing that as well, Early Heart.
Okay. Well, it'd be nice to have some samples of those.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we'll do our last musical selection after we just finish up here. We'll go out on that. So we'll just take a 1 minute here. You can mention about that you got the classroom version now.
Yes.
So, and you don't have to go to a classroom to see it.
No, you don't. Now we have three versions of An Oregon Story, which tells this amazing story of how we saved our farmland and our beaches, too. So you go to anoregonstory.com, and you can watch the full-length version. You can watch a 25-minute one, and now the classroom one, which has a different narrator. We have more young people speaking. We did it so for high school students and college students, so you can connect with these young people and how much they value Oregon and the way it is. And the total goal of this work is to keep Oregon this wonderful state, a great place to live, work, and farm. And so I encourage folks to look at it. I'd love to hear those who have a chance to watch any of those to give us a shout and let us know how they like it.
And when Jim says we and us, he's not talking about me. He's talking about Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions, who has helped us out for years now.
Our hero, Joe.
Yes. right.
And Joe and I, it's a labor of love doing these films.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, they're well done. Okay. Great, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn.
It was fun to have your grandkids here again.
Yeah.
And to see Lorraine.
And we'll see you on the 22nd.
Yes, so. That's 2 weeks from now.
Yes,
right.
That's right.
We'll finish up with our final musical selection of a king that we do want. And this is Freddie King. It's kind of hard to keep these straight, but this is an instrumental called San Jose. This is Glenn Andreessen. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7